Hello, and welcome to the Marketing Experiments Web Clinic Audio Replay Podcast. Marketing Experiments is an internet marketing research laboratory. The web clinic you are about to hear was broadcast live to an international audience of marketing professionals. Sign up to be invited to future web clinics, as well as gain access to all of our online marketing research at marketingexperiments.com.
Welcome again to another Marketing Experiments Web Clinic. This one is on a rather controversial topic. We don't intend it to be controversial, but it is a subject with which there is a great deal of debate and, I think, confusion. The question that we pose today is, does brand really matter? And we want to talk to you about an experiment that we conducted. As with everything here in Mech Labs and with Marketing Experiments, we work very hard to apply sort of experimental philosophy. We want to think deeply about our assumptions and our warrants, and then we want to run experiments to see how those warrants are somehow impacted as we pose various hypotheses. We've done a lot of that as it relates to brand over the last 20 years, but we've rarely spoken about it. In fact, much of our work has been focused on the value proposition. And if you've attended our clinics, been to our events, you may know that we've extended the concept and framework of value proposition while, you know, studying the tradition itself and dialoguing with the academics and with the experts in the subject. Mostly we've conducted experiments, thousands of them. Today we're going to draw from those experiments and relate what we learned about value proposition to brand. And I think you'll find this content is different. It's unusual for one of our standard web clinics, but it's so desperately needed. You can talk about this with your colleagues using hashtag web clinic, and I'm going to skip my boring bio and go on to the first experiment, test protocol 1651. You can see it behind me. It is with the Boston Globe, a well-respected brand. The Globe has been an excellent research partner, and I just want to say that senior leadership there has been remarkable in taking something traditional such as the newspaper business and thinking about it in new ways. And Peter Doucette, in particular, one of our key partners at the Globe, has pioneered all sorts of new territory in the newspaper business, and I respect his work and, most of all, his attitude. I've said over and over again something that I think I might say as we start this today. There are no expert marketers. There are only experienced marketers and expert testers. And at the Globe, we have been testing. And I want to share one with you. It is with regards to this increase in the number of online subscriptions. We have a simple research question. Which offer page will result in the highest subscription rate? And with that in mind, take a look. Here's the original page. And frankly, you may want to think about for just a moment how you would improve this page. In fact, if you're in the audience watching this right now or even in a replay somewhere on the internet, you'll find you'll get more out of this content if you engage your thinking in a sort of existential way. Move from the abstract and move from thinking about just the words that I'm saying and their possibilities, but rather think about this particular page and for just a moment imagine that you were tasked with improving it. It doesn't matter whether your background is optimization or web design or technology or you're a senior leader. Just think about what you might do to improve the performance of this page. Now, there are many things you might arrive at, and several different approaches might improve the yield. We were focused on brand. The original page used a template CMS structure that did very little to leverage the brand. It raises the question about when to use the brand and how powerful is the brand and what is the brand's impact on conversion. In this case, we made some changes. I want you to notice the original, this is the control, and the four steps of the process. We would call this a thought sequence. And it's not just four steps in a thought sequence because there might be 30 micro yeses, 40 micro yeses embedded in the step-by-step progression through which someone would go through one of these particular opportunities to subscribe. What we want to focus, however, on is one key element in the thought sequence. We want to tie into something that already exists. Marketer, listen to me carefully. It's one thing to start completely over when you begin a dialogue. It's like meeting a new person. There is no stored equity in regards to the relationship, and so all the equity has to be created in the unfolding of the relationship over time. But if you can tap into something that already exists, if you can find a reserve with which you can sort of appeal to, then there is much more opportunity to move someone forward in some sort of incremental decision. And in this case, we wanted to tap a sort of thought reserve, an equity position that doesn't occur on a balance sheet, but rather occurs in the mind. We did so at the Globe. We did so by focusing this page in a new way on a single important starting point. Look at the top. It says the Boston Globe. Now, the Boston Globe is an old brand, well-known, well-respected, well-regarded, and in fact, when you're in the position as these marketers were at the Globe, you almost assume certain things about the organization, because somewhere on the page, the Globe is referenced, and people assume, marketers assume, that someone coming into this flow is already clear. But you can't do that. This is not a web page. This is a series of visual cues. It's zeros and ones. It's pixels. We are not optimizing a web page. We are optimizing a thought sequence. And as we think about the sequence of micro yeses necessary to achieving the macro yes, i.e. a subscription, what we need to do is think about a way to tap into that reserve. And so we're going to emphasize the equity created in the mind by the Globe over many years. We do that by making a simple, easy change on the page. You can see the page, the Boston Globe. And you'll notice that we carry that all the way through the process. What do we see? Well, look at the difference. Essentially, that page, the new treatment and path is emphasizing the Boston Globe as opposed to that sort of subscriber logo that you see up on the left. This is the primary difference between the two pages. And the question I have for you is, how impactful is this particular change going to be on the conversion rate? Now think about that page again, because we could have changed many keys. We could have reduced friction, and we could have added more conversation around the value proposition. But in fact, all we really did, or at least the most important change we made, was the one you see in front of you. Here is the impact. 40%. Now, my concern for many of you is that you see a number like this, and it's impressive, but you don't cash it in sort of existentially into the lives of the people who are involved with this. This is the sort of transformation. This is a move in a new direction that has high impact, not just on some spreadsheet or some balance sheet, but it makes a big difference for every single member of that marketing team. It makes a big difference for the people who work in that paper, who need it to thrive and prosper so they can continue to have careers, so they can continue to fulfill their calling with regards to journalism. It makes a big difference for every reader who might miss the opportunity to participate in what the Globe is offering, knowing that it would be good for them, but not realizing that the Globe itself, that brand, and all that it stands for is behind the offer. So 40% means a lot to a lot of people in different ways, and most of all, at this present moment, it should mean something important to you. It should mean that by a simple change of some visual cues, virtually two words, we intensify the force of the entire offer, and we do it with such a subtle difference. How can two words have such a dramatic impact on conversion? I mean, if the words had been "get it free," three words, you can see how that might impact conversion. There might be some other words we could conceive of that would have high impact, but a simple name changes the throughput of this conversion process. What's going on here? And it sort of leads to a more profound question. And I invite anyone who attends these clinics to think not just as marketers, but as philosophers. The book that we're releasing soon is called The Marketer as Philosopher. And for you to become the marketer who can truly achieve results, you've got to become a student of the human mind, and particularly of the decision process. And to do that, you need to question everything. You know, philosophy is not so good sometimes at providing answers. Sometimes philosophy raises many questions and science provides the answers, but unless philosophy is doing its job, science doesn't know what questions to answer. And in fact, you'll find the greatest scientists posed philosophical sorts of questions about space-time and time-space and the fabric of the universe and matter and all of those things. And there was a day when a philosopher and a physicist were identical people in our society. In fact, the terms were synonymous. The world has changed and specialization has taken place. But the marketer who thinks like a philosopher can tackle a subject like this today in a different and more profound way. Now, I'm not trying to, add a bunch of drama or overcomplicate a simple subject. I believe sincerely that if you were to reconceive of brand, it may help you achieve significant, profound, meaningful results in your day-to-day activities. So let's think about this and let's ask a simple question. How should marketers conceive of brand? And as we ask that question, it's helpful to remember that brand is not a logo. You say, well, that's a wonderful brand. It is a wonderful brand in the sense that it is a cue, it is a symbol, but it is not the brand itself. Here's another example. A brand is not a slogan. A brand is not a spokesperson. All of these can serve to underscore, intensify, emphasize brand, but they're not enough. Our problem is not that we don't have, brand, an understanding of brand, or our problem is not that we have brand confusion, but rather that we're confused about brand. Brand is not a color palette. These key colors have a very important evocative role in tapping into a piece of mental equity, but they themselves are not the brand. And so I say again, our problem is not brand confusion, but rather confusion about the brand. This should lead you to start to ask a deeper question. How do I think about brand in my day-to-day activities? How do I leverage brand? How can I use brand to get greater results? And how can I keep from misusing brand or creating pages that rely on brand and brand alone? You need to understand that brand can cover a multitude of sins, and it often does. Big companies get away with terrible pages because the equity built up in the brand provides trust and can provide a sort of internal, organic momentum. Other smaller companies come along and copy those pages, thinking those pages make the difference, not understanding that it is the brand covering for the poor page and path design, and the smaller company imitates the wrong thing and gets horrific results. So let's think about brand in a different way. I'm not offering here a definition of brand. That will come in later clinics. In fact, today is just a sort of a tiny introduction to a new way to conceive of brand. But for now, I just want to talk about a sort of insight. Brand is the aggregate experience of the value proposition. What does this mean? The aggregate experience of the value proposition. We've got to unpack that. And we're going to look at more experiments, and we're going to do live optimization if we have time. But we're going to unpack those two phrases in bold, those two-word phrases. The beginning is the aggregate experience. Brand represents the sum total of experience in the marketplace, particularly those that connect in some way to you. I'm going to try to unpack that, but people who experience some form of the value proposition, we're going to talk about what that means in the next point, but people who have that experience, talk about, share with each other, or directly experience it with you, and they start to build a mental impression. This impression is tightly linked to an expectation. We're going to talk about that in just a moment. Brand exists in the mind. You don't own the brand. The brand is owned by every single individual who has a conception, an impression of your group. And it represents a sort of mental shorthand, and it becomes very important at a time when people are overwhelmed with information. I was in those days conducting experiments on the net back prior to 2000 when people said, this is the new way to do business, and we just capture eyeballs and we'll monetize them later. And they threw out the solid rules of business, and in 2000, many of you remember, there was a tremendous collapse. In those days, I also heard, brand doesn't matter anymore. People have choice. They're a click away from whatever option they need, and brand is going to diminish. I thought to myself, you are so wrong. I argued with others because I realized, or at least I believed, that the more options that proliferate and the greater the amount of information coming at us, the more we need these mental shortcuts, these simple ways to process lots of information. And brand is sort of like a handle that you can pick up with your mind. It stands for a sort of collective of decisions, and it represents a default choice in your mind. It implies a sort of expectation. When you see this brand, you have an expectation. Apple could release an iChicken, and we'd stand in line waiting for it. Why? Because in the successive releases, those that precede this next release, whatever it is, we have had a series of positive experiences that have generated a certain type of expectation around what an Apple product is, how it feels, how we experience it, and the way we enjoy it. A brand is powerful in that. And by the way, this itself is not the brand. This is a mental cue, and this cue triggers something inside of you that taps into this collective sort of set of impressions about Apple and its products. Now, what is your expectation when you see this brand? Ask yourself this. Some of you may not be converted yet to Mac for your primary unit. We use PCs in our office, though I own a Mac. And I've resisted the whole Mac as my primary computer for years, for decades. I watched the birth of Apple and of Microsoft. And in this lab, the oldest lab, Mech Labs is the oldest lab that's been studying the Internet, I tracked sort of the rivalry between the two companies, and particularly between Steve and Bill Gates, fascinated, wondering how the story would end, and watching in awe what happened when Steve took back the helm of Apple, simplified the product mix, and then released what he called the next big thing. I only say that to say this. There's an expectation around that particular mental cue that triggers the power of Apple's brand. What about this brand? Some of you may not recognize this brand, but there was a time when, in terms of audit and consulting, this was the name that symbolized absolute integrity. Today they're gone. It stands for lying and cheating and stealing. It connects to Enron and many other scandals, and the entire organization and its brand and its power evaporated overnight. What happened? Brings me to a third point. Brand does not make a promise. It creates an expectation. I hear over and over again the brand promise. I don't care about your brand promise. If you come to me to sell me something and you make a claim, you're just another one of those people out there who makes claims that I have to sort through, and I don't know which one to believe, and my guard is automatically up. And with my guard up, you have to overcome it, and you have to drive somehow through it enough evidence to convince me. That is a tough place to be in. In Tai Chi, they teach the best fight is no fight, and the least amount of energy is an example of the best way to engage with someone. And the same thing occurs in marketing. If you were to look and if you were to think about brand in this way, you must understand that what you want to do is not force a claim across someone's defenses, but create within them, foster an expectation. The expectation originates inside of them, and the claim originates with me. I don't want to try to hammer you down with claims. I want to tap into those expectations and get you to start to believe something. Marketers aren't in the business of making claims. We're in the business of fostering expectations. And the strength of your brand is directly connected to how you derive it from expectation. It's not a matter of declaration. It's a matter of expectation. These are old brands, brands you've seen many times, and they have power. And you're going to find that a brand has the ability to survive company reorganizations and management teams and shifts in culture and eras and even the product itself. When you think of Hewlett-Packard, for instance, it is represented many different positions in terms of engineering, but it has come to stand for something that transcends all of that. Coca-Cola and Colgate and the Journal and Jack, all of these brands have a specific sort of power that is transcendent. Why? Because their real force is not derived from the company, but from the mind of the customers and the potential customers. And this occurs on a grand scale, but it also occurs on a sort of local spell. It is true of the macro. It is true of the micro. Let me show you an image. What is that? It might look like a line outside of an Apple store waiting for the next release of the iPhone. But it's not. It's actually in a very tough part of town in New York. And if you look very carefully, you can see some letters stenciled over that black. And it says Sylvia's. And that line is a group of people desperately waiting to get inside of a little restaurant in Harlem. Off of Lenox. Now, most of us may not know about this. And frankly, I wouldn't know about it except for the fact that my wife was in New York. And she was one of those people in line. And when she came back, she raved about this place. This little restaurant was founded in 1962 by Sylvia. And the reputation that it has built for a quality dining experience and the authentic food has transcended its location so that people from all over the world come to visit Sylvia's. Famous politicians and movie stars and celebrities get in that same line to get inside of that restaurant and enjoy the experience. Now listen, if you've been to New York City, you know that there's a restaurant every 50 yards. What is it about this place that transcends so many of its competitors? There's an experience. There's a particular value proposition that this restaurant offers. And its value proposition has generated a set of experiences in the marketplace, and the aggregate experience of that has created buzz and conversation and a viral impact. And it's also created within the first-hand experience of genuine customers a desire to come back and to talk to other people. And that has created a brand for a single restaurant. Now, I say that to say this. It doesn't matter whether you're a global enterprise, a local restaurant, or an individual, brand can have a massive impact on the way you communicate and the force of your communication. It stores equity in the mind. It is the equity of positive expectation. Let's look at another rather odd example. There's a book here. Some of you may not have heard it yet. It's called, The Cuckoo's Calling. It's on Amazon. This book was released and received some critical acclaim. The publisher claims also that it sold 1,500 copies, but according to Nielsen, it actually sold 449. However, at some point, a journalist began to question who the writer might really be. And a story leaked not long ago. In fact, this was just a few nights ago that all this took place. That the actual writer was J.K. Rowling. And that book went overnight from 5,076 in its ranking on Amazon to number one. And now copies are flying off the shelves. Wait a second. Think about that. What happened here? Because it's the same book. The same book that was turned down by publisher after publisher. The same book that received some small acclaim but only sold 449 copies. What happened? What was it that so filled this offer with force? The brand. It is the brand. Because J.K. Rowling is a brand. And in fact, now this book will continue to sell in remarkable quantities. Many more people are going to say yes. Because the power of the brand is behind it. Which brings me to this second point. And I am running out of time. I have 7 minutes. I'm on my second point. I normally can cover my content very evenly, but what I'm talking about is so important that I'm trying so hard to help you get a sense of the important sort of nuances associated with this topic. I will use these 7 minutes as carefully as possible and fast. Brand is the aggregate experience of the value proposition. So now we talk about the value proposition. What is the value proposition? We've spent 20 years researching this term, or at least this concept, and eventually this term. Why should I buy from you rather than any of other competitor? Sort of crystallizes and a whole framework and set of complicated heuristics that we've been building in the lab. My concern is that when you see it in this format, it seems so simple that you miss its profundity, because every single word is carefully chosen, and that question is designed to make it simple for you to understand a highly complex concept. I have spent 20 years plus asking a single question. Why do people say yes? And at the heart of that answer is this concept reframed, this notion of the value proposition. Before I start to unpack it, I just want to point out to you that as important as brand is, and it has become distorted today by many groups, and I can't read all of these remarkable quotes from the father of brand, David Ogilvy, but you need to know, based on what you can read here, that Ogilvy conceived the brand as something altogether different than what you see in the average agency today. And I'm not anti-agency. A third of my students are agencies. So if you're an agency, I'm not against you. I'm for you. But we need to rethink how we consider brand. Look at some of the things that he said here. Speaking to other agencies, he said, "Your favorite music is the applause of your fellow art directors and copywriters. Our favorite music is the ring of the cash register." He said, "Every ad must sell." He said, "You generalists pride yourselves on being creative, and whatever that awful word means, you cultivate the mystique of creativity. You regard advertising as an art form and expect your clients to finance expressions of your genius." This is the man who says we've lost our way and don't understand the power of brand. And you can get all of these quotes from David Ogilvy when you see the video or get the transcript and article that will follow this. All I want you to know is that David had an instinct for the value proposition, even if he didn't use those words the way we use them, and connected the value proposition to the role of the brand. Which brings me back to breaking down this simple question. We said that brand is an answer to this question. If I am your ideal prospect or the value proposition, why should I buy from you rather than your competitor? I want you to notice a few key points. Number one, this is stated in the first person. You cannot understand your value proposition when you think about it from a sort of isolated, abstract way. You have to step into the skin of your customers and you have to see through their eyes. The importance of framing the value proposition through their perspective is vital because so many great sounding products have been launched only to end in disaster or mediocrity because we framed them with company logic as opposed to customer logic. And you've got to get inside of the customer's mindset. Notice the next phrase, your ideal prospect. Your ideal prospect is going to respond to a particular. A value proposition focuses on a specific segment, and it requires you to consider who you're going to serve, but especially who you're not going to serve, because you can't serve everyone best. Notice this next question, why should I? Your true and authentic value proposition should be always in the form of a reason. In fact, it is a construct. It becomes the ultimate argument. It's the ultimate argument that you would offer someone as to why they should purchase from you. And that ultimate argument can be summarized in a sort of special reason, and that ultimate reason forms the essential statement of your value proposition. In fact, if I ask you your value proposition and you give me an answer and I can't insert the word because in front of it, it's probably not a value proposition at all. I'd love to teach more on this. You can go to our website, marketingexperiments.com, and research the term value proposition. Just search for it. Many articles will come up and you can read them and they're all free. Let me go to point four because of my time. A value proposition must differentiate you from your competitors in at least one way. You've got to have an only factor. If you don't, why should they purchase from you? Why not purchase from the other party? We spend too much time trying to fix product problems with marketing efforts. But when we develop a truly authentic value proposition, we don't have to resort to specialized, nuanced language. Our goal then is clarity, and clarity trumps persuasion every day of the week. Clarity trumps persuasion. Now, I'm running out of time, and I can show you examples submitted by our audience, and I'm just going to slip through these. Here's an audience homepage. Where is the value proposition? How does this connect with the brand? I could ask that about each one of these three, but in the interest of our time, I'm going to take you to the second key principle under the second point. Every element on your page should state or support the essence of your value proposition. Let me explain that to you with a simple and final case study. If you have the remaining time left, I'm looking right here and I'm almost out, less than a minute. You need to see this simple study. I'm going to deliver it to you as fast as possible, and it will sort of summarize all that I've been teaching. This page was brought to us by a famous brand, Encyclopedia Britannica. And the goal was to get visitors to sign up for a free trial. And what you're seeing is the control. And again, I'd ask you to think, what would you do to try and improve this control? Well, we looked at it, and we analyzed many weaknesses. We said the headline doesn't communicate the value proposition, the members' benefits, and the most important part of the selling is outside of the iPath. The images on the left and the bottom don't communicate anything about the service. We're applying a heuristic here. We're not just sort of having a discussion around the page. Anybody that's been a part of marketing experiments knows that we apply a series of heuristics to delve into the cognitive psychology and find the weakness associated with the page's design. Here we applied one that you've probably heard many times, C equals 4M plus 3V plus 2I minus F minus 2A. That heuristic allows us to start to discern these problems. New headline in the new page addresses that problem, clearly delivering the essence of the value proposition, capitalizing on the brand itself, communicating with clarity what there is about this offer. I could show you how the bullets are used to support the essential reason, the value proposition, so that we now have a sort of grand argument on this page. A grand argument closely associated with the power of the brand. And if you'll look deep into the bullet points, you'll see how that happens. For instance, it says, used by 4,755 universities. Only Encyclopedia Britannica can make such a claim. And only in that way can it differentiate itself from some of the free alternatives on the internet. Notice, again, changes in the page. I'd love to talk about what happens below that when we talk about activate your free trial. Time doesn't permit me to break down all of these key components. But agencies, even the graphic uses a caption. I know you may not like captions, but it uses a caption to effectively communicate the entire value proposition in a single phrase. This would be a product-level value proposition, and that's what it's doing. I could spend the entire 30 minutes, and have done this in other lectures, breaking this page down. All I want you to do in our remaining moments is see the original and see the treatment and see the difference. There's the original, there's the treatment, and here's what experimental philosophy sort of yields. 103% increase in conversion. Revenue doubled for this group. Once they knew how to get clear about the value proposition, tap into the aggregate experience of it, connect it to the brand, and communicate with power. With that, I can only come to a sort of summary of all that we've been talking about. You'll see behind me five of the most common errors we see associated with the way people use brand. I want to teach more. I apologize that I'm out of time. If you'd like us to teach more on this subject, email us. Put it in the comments. Put it in the feedback. We'll continue to try and help understand how all of these important, nuanced principles connect. At Mech Labs, we've conducted 10,000 plus experiments, and this is often published through our publication, Marketing Experiments, and its journal and these clinics. I want to keep learning what really works. Help us understand more and sort of join a community of people who are searching with all their might for these answers. Thank you. Share us and the site with a friend, and we would appreciate it. Thank you again.
Thank you for listening to this recording of a Marketing Experiments live web clinic. You can sign up to receive invites to future live web clinics, as well as receive access to $10 million worth of internet marketing research at marketingexperiments.com.